Hi, Patrick here. And if you've listened to much of the back catalogue of this pod, you'll know of our never-ending quest to find new ways to dramatize the death of so many languages. And also of our attempts, quite often lame attempts, to avoid the usual ways of talking about this. Well, today, we're going to have another go. We have four languages that are on death's door. We could get linguists to talk about them, to talk about how these languages each have unique ways of expressing certain things or feelings or some state of the human condition. We've gone down that road before. I'm sure we'll do it again. We could also hear directly from some of the people who speak those languages. And so long as we didn't dress that up in the old cliched folksy public radio way, so long as we didn't do that, that would be legit too. But what about this? Set aside the inevitable history of these minority languages disappearing. Set aside the linguistics. Set aside the meaning of the words in these languages. Just listen to the sounds. Here's Marco over on Big Show Channel.
When I hear music like this, I often wonder where it came from. What was the inspiration? Well, we do know what inspired this particular piece of music. Kevin James composed it. He lives in New York City. And for the past few years, James has been working on something he calls the Vanishing Languages Project. He starts with recordings of endangered languages, ones with very few, or in one case, no remaining native speakers. These recordings trigger musical ideas that become extended string and percussion pieces. Recently, James debuted his latest work in Brooklyn and San Francisco. He says he first started thinking about the power of endangered languages in his teens. It was the 1970s, and he was watching a documentary about Australian Aboriginal land rights trials. In the documentary, an Aboriginal man prepared to testify. The man was the last native speaker of his language, and James recalls how this man insisted on giving testimony in his language without translation.
And it was beautiful. And at the end of his testimony, it was clear that everyone in the courtroom was very moved, and the judges seemed to come to the conclusion that it was better to hear it given in his own language than it could have been translated, mainly because of the obvious emotion and the sense that this was the last person who could speak this language, and it was such a lovely language, such a really beautiful language. The sense that this was going to be lost, along with his land, that his culture and his language would be lost as well. It came across as a gift to have heard this language spoken one more time. The Vanishing Languages Project began about 6 years ago. I like for my music, whenever possible, to capture a moment, a historical moment, a time on earth. And this was timely. We expect to lose at least half the world's languages before the end of the century. I focused on four different languages. The Kwilu language, which is from the Pacific Northwest. The Kwilu language has a more of a cadence to it. There's also a lot of exclamation. The Ainu language, which is from Hokkaido, the northern island of Japan. The Ainu language has a lot of melody in it in terms of range, but it's also a lot of stops and starts. And then two Australian Aboriginal languages, Dalabong and Jolong, which are based in Arnhem Land, which is in the northern part of Australia. They're very quickly spoken, they're very melodic, and a lot of the language, the Dalabong language, seemed to me to imitate animal sounds. The concept behind this project was to take those qualities, to take the inflections, and use those as the basis of music, rather than most music is based on physics. How many divisions of a second can you make? And how do you count that time? And it's regular. that time is regular. You beat out a beat, you keep that beat, you can make it a little faster, a little slower. But when we speak, the inflection is much more fluid. And the same is true of the melodic aspects of a lot of languages, in terms of how much register they cover. In each of the pieces, the musicians are asked at certain points to mimic actual words or actual sounds of the language. But the mirroring of the language was the springboard. It was the jumping off place. The point of the piece was to extend that musically and to take those phrases and see how far I could go with them. For these pieces, I really do prefer that the audience experience be as pure as possible. I mean, for me, my first experience was not understanding and nobody understanding what was being spoken. And that being a very pure and revealing experience. I find people, when they don't have a visual to back up the audio, that they go searching and that they assign their own meanings. And I think that's a more meaningful experience than them listening and picturing somebody cooking. I think it's more meaningful for them to find their own place for that, their own visual for that, their own set of contexts in terms of their own experience.
A taste there of the Ainu language from northern Japan. Kevin James of the Vanishing Languages Project spoke to producer Bruce Wallace. For one final dose of indigenous sounds, we're going to leave you in one of the richest places on earth for local music, Timbuktu.
Chers membres de la délégation nationale, chers festivaliers, mesdames et messieurs, bonsoir.
The decade-old festival in the desert in Timbuktu in northern Mali has featured incredible artists from the region playing some of the coolest indigenous music on earth. But this year's festival didn't happen because of the rebellion in the north of Mali and the imposition of Sharia law. The rebels literally outlawed music. Even a slightly musical ringtone could land you in serious trouble. So as an alternative, we can offer the sounds of the last time the festival convened, January 2012. A compilation of songs from that edition has just come out, live from Festival au Désert, Timbuktu. Here's a taste of one artist from the new live CD, the incredible string playing of Baseku Kuyate. Life in Timbuktu and northern Mali is easier now after French troops helped the Malian army rout militants earlier this year, but many locals worry the conflict will return. We'll be sure to keep you up to date on the story.
That's it for this time. There'll be another pod next week. There might even be two. In the meantime, see you on Facebook or Twitter. My Twitter handle is Patrick Cox, PatriCox, or see you at theworld.org/language. Bye for now.